Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, guys and gals, this is your favorite radio voice guy, and now for America's number one tech socialite and her very own real-life rocket scientist, yes, he is a scholar and a gentleman, it's time for Cairo Queen's Taste of Technology with co-host Juarez Jackson. They talk everything from nanotech to blogging, making technology palatable for everyday people. Ladies and gents, let's hear it for them. Yeah!
Oh, yeah. My gosh, yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Let me hear it from myself.
Welcome to Cairo Queen's Taste of Technology with co-host Juarez Jackson. I can already tell you it's going to be crunk. I called Juarez earlier. I said, Juarez, I'm feeling kind of funky today. You know, I'm feeling kind of... Let me tell you what I did to make myself feel better. And I have an issue. Like, I have an issue, America.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I drove to Publix, and I got a box of chocolate-covered donuts.
Ooh.
If you have not had... donuts from Publix, and they have chocolate-covered donuts specifically.
Mm.
You have not had a donut. You have not had a donut. Juarez, have you ever had the chocolate-covered donuts from Publix?
From Publix? I want to say I have not, but if you're telling me it's better than Krispy Kreme and all these other Dunkin' Donuts out here,
I'm not trying to hear that. Let me get real Southern, baby.
Make you slap your mama, huh?
Can I just say better than ...
Oh, wow.
Look, they got Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' Donuts beat upside down. I just had to tell everyone, I mean, I literally have an issue because I have an addiction, and everybody knows and knows me, I have an issue with chocolate. But when you're talking about better than chocolate cake, better than, let me get to the show.
But I can understand it, though. You know, that's actually pretty understandable. Look at it for technology-wise, right? These companies out there like Krispy Kreme, like Dunkin' Donuts, they probably have, you know, this assembly line of donuts that we're used to as the standard. When you get to one of these mom-and-pop shops, and, you know, sometimes I travel up north, and they have some of those, you know, those custom donut shops. Man, you eat a donut out of there, man, you think that Dunkin' Donuts is chalkboard. You're like, I'm through with them. You know, they have been disappointing me for years, and I have just had enough. It's that good.
I divorced Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah,
I grew up on Dunkin' Donuts.
Let me tell you. Like, they have pizza places up there that will have you, I mean, it will be testifying. You'll be like, I can't believe that I've been eating pizza all my life and calling it pizza. That's not what it is. So
I
understand.
I'm talking about doing the dance that you do at church.
Testifying.
Listen, I'm so glad today we have you. You know, we have Warren in his rare summer form right now of producer mode, and he's put together some awesome shows. But first, before we get into any of that, I want to thank Robin. And, you know, I was thinking we have not thanked Robin properly in the last, like, few shows. So I want to make sure, even though Robin doesn't like to do the applause thing, Robin, I want you to know how very grateful I am to you for absolutely everything. If it wasn't for you, the show wouldn't even exist. So I appreciate you more than
fireworks
you could possibly ever know.
Gunshot.
I just really do. Just
bomb.
So does Juarez. Juarez wouldn't be here either if it wasn't for you. So we're very appreciative. And I'm sure he could say it himself, but I'm, like, hopped up on chocolate, which is, I think, the new alternative to cocaine, apparently, and donuts. But
it is cocoa.
I never did that before. Never did that before, but it is cocoa.
This is a PA announcement. That's not what we're promoting here.
That's
but
not
we will tell
what
you
I'm
about
saying.
The technology, okay?
But I will flip cocoa all day.
Oh, and night. Because if you have too much
you
of
tell,
it.
My energy level changed entirely. I'm like, I had too many donuts. We won't
I'm
talk
glad.
About that. But, well,
I'm glad
where
you're
are
back.
You?
So where am I? I am in Atlanta, Georgia. I am definitely back at home. I'll be back at home for just a little while. So looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. So this
we
is where
Juarez
I am.
In Atlanta.
Yes.
We need that Juarez energy in Atlanta.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Okay,
so go ahead.
Talk to me. We got a great guest coming on today. And, I mean, tell me about some stuff. I want to tell you about some things I did this week. We have a great guest coming on today.
Right. Yeah, we have, I mean, one of the most phenomenal people I've ever met in my life. And I've met a lot of phenomenal people.
Wow.
Just really, first and foremost, just really in a positive person. When you meet people that are just like a light of positivity, you have to keep them in your life that, you know, they just shine no matter where you go, where it could be whatever continent you're on, whatever place, you know you're going to see them and y'all going to have a good time because it's just positivity all the time. So, we've definitely have had over the years, I want to say, some of the most impactful conversations that a brother can have with another brother as far as just really trying to solve world hunger, world peace. And we have basically pontificated about everything there is and have tried to solve it at one time or another. So I would imagine that him being in education now would be, where he's at, because I've known him for a long time and I've definitely sat up and seen and heard some of the work he's tried to do and is trying to do. So very exciting brother that we have coming on the line, and I've known, like I said, for a lot of years. So just very, very looking forward to, just really being more of what we can do, right? This is really a take it home, take it to roots. We've brought people on here that you can get involved in their struggle. But really, the struggle is really at home. The struggle begins where we're at, and it starts
absolutely.
Starts at our top of our head and works our way on down.
Yeah, I'm looking, you know what? I have to say this because I've realized something, and for everyone that doesn't know, I haven't known Juarez all his life, but I think he's phenomenal. And when I become Oprah of technology, I promise you we're going to have to build the Juarez circle of friends because you have some outstanding friends. And
right,
you have, like,
I
this
mean,
global network for people to join and just have memberships to talk to. Because, of course, I went to Get Motivated today. Will Jolly was there, a production of Les Brown. And so I was sitting here thinking the entire time, like, we could do this. Like, we could do this thing. And the people who we bring to this platform, we could literally charge people to talk to them because they are so awesome.
Awesome.
I mean,
let me tell you, a real life situation is that I had two people within this last week. They reached out to me and said, listen, One person said, I have a product that I'm already selling. They're building a different kind of alternator for a car. So basically, basically the spec said, I'm not going to go into the technology part of it, but it's basically 10 times better than any alternator we have out there. And they've built it already. All they need is somebody to sketch it up in SolidWorks or one of these computer animated design programs.
AutoCAD.
AutoCAD, right? So I had to break down because when people use acronyms and then other people like AutoCAD, okay, I got to Google that. CAD stands for computer animated design. So, right. So those are the kind of things that I was like, wow, I do have a big network and a lot of people, but I couldn't really figure out who. And then I had my mother-in-law came to me and she said she also was thinking of an idea and she was looking to get published. So I said, wow, I have these two people within the same week. I put a post on Facebook and the amount of response of people, I may have tagged like four or five people off of the top of my head. I could think that are engineers that I know that could do some blueprints. But the amount of response of people that just, you know, came and said, hey, I know AutoCAD. Hey, I know AutoCAD too. I know SolidWorks. I have a certificate. I'm licensed. I'm, you know, all these different, you know, people are sending me instant messages. So, yeah, your network is definitely a net worth. And I think it's great to always be in cahoots with people who are doing great things, you know. It's not job riding, as they call it. I mean, you know, and I say all praises due to God because I've always tried to be awesome. Nevertheless, you know, it takes a long time to continue to try and, try and do the right things and not get caught up by some of the things that everyone can fall into, right? Because I think our own personal enemy is ourselves the most of the time and not finding out what our true gifts are and using our true gifts to the best of our abilities. So a lot of times we have to fight against ourselves to get our full potential that we already have. It's just really fine tweaking it and tuning it to do the things that we're meant to be.
So I think that you magnify like attracts like because you have a people magnet. I mean, I have one and, you know, I just want people to know that my magnet is, I think it almost pales to yours. Cause
you want to compare magnets
now? I just like to dive into people. People just gravitate to you. So I think it's awesome.
Well.
I mean, exciting stuff. I'm really happy. And I'm extremely proud to have you as my co-host. I know I say that a lot, but I truly mean it, and it's almost an emotional thing for me because I'm just like, I just love Juarez pieces. Y'all don't even understand. Like, it's
this
so exciting
Juarez
to be
team.
In his, you know, just to be in his friend clique. But
yes,
to have him as a co-host, I talk about you literally every day. I was in the ladies' restroom today. And I was like, I don't know who she is. I promise you. I was like, I looked over a lady. She was like, what are you doing? I told her about the show. And I said, you know, it's really cool. I said, I'm a tech socialite and sort of a novice. I said, but I have the privilege of having a rocket scientist as my co-host. I was like, and everybody always says the exact same thing. Oh, my God, that's cool. Do you know how cool you really are? You don't even know if you know how rare it is to have.
The only reason I said rocket science, I said, you know what? Who can say that they have a master's in rocket science? It's like, that's so rare. And plus, you know, okay, I was doing the work, but when I got the degree, I was in full understanding that I know a lot of stuff that people really don't care about, but they say, hey, that's pretty cool. And I always like the fact that I can say.
American, not even from another country. You're African American.
That's right. I'm here. I was born in Jamaica, raised here, but yeah, I'm here. I'm all, you know, ATLian grown in Atlanta, East Side of Atlanta product, you know, so definitely it's something that's not unattainable. And I try to tell, and a lot of times what happens is that your circle gets bigger when you do things. Like I have met a lot of people through just volunteering, and you'd find out, like, I have a couple people lined up. I met them through volunteering, and it's just simple as going out and you see other people with like minds that are doing really fabulous things.
Well, we got like a couple more minutes before the commercial break. I needed to make mention of this that I didn't mention last week. But if you notice, everyone that has called me nuts, I want everybody to pay attention to the news. It's everywhere now. Now that you can see it, it's out in the open. Japan now has replaced humans in the grocery stores with what? Human-like robots. And
that's
it's
right.
actually happening in more places than just Japan. So if you're not paying attention, I've been warning you about this for years. I'm mad at myself. I had to repost my book this week because I was like, I had a book that I was going to release back in 2012, and it was 2013, and it was called The Makings of Stupid, which was my conspiracy theory book on technology. Well, ironically, and I'm in the store, so I'm probably going to have to press mute in a minute, but ironically, you know, I'm looking out and I'm watching all these things come to life that I was writing about. And had I written about this and released it, nobody would have got it and would have thought I was nuts. I'm getting ready to release that book, I'm telling you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, we got a commercial break coming up, and we're going to bring on this fantastic guest that you brought on for us.
Absolutely. So, after our commercial break, you will be mesmerized by James Harris, extraordinaire. So we look forward to everybody coming back. You know, you stay where you're right at. Come back with us, and we'll have our guests.
And we'll be right back. Thanks so much. Cue to Robin.
Are you getting ready to celebrate a special moment? Need a way to raise money for your organization? Or just simply love scented candles? Well, come stick your nose in our business to smell the best scent around town, and I'm sure your nose will be pleased. For more information, call 404-954-1206 or visit igotsprinkles.com. I Got Sprinkles. Come put your nose in our business.
Are you frustrated at the thought of shopping? Is it time to change your style but you don't know where to start? Would you love to have someone shop for you and have you looking and feeling fabulous? Well, we have the solution for you. Love eFashion. They handle everything from closet organization, styling, wardrobe, gift shopping, and so much more. Go to loveefashion.com or call them at 404-908-7997 and tell them WXRP sent you and receive 30 minutes of service free when you purchase any service. Love eFashion, helping you look and feel fabulous.
Get that.
Hey, who do we have there? Do we have James Harris online?
He is on the line.
James Harris, how in the world are you, beloved?
Like, we have a guest. Wonderful.
I'm good. Well, I'm good. Happy to be on the show.
Awesome. Well, it is a joy and a privilege for us to now be speaking with you and to talk to you today. And we just look forward to really, you know, tapping your mind and seeing some of the things. We want to say thank you for taking your time, first and foremost. I know as an elected school board official that you definitely are strapped for time. You have a family, a lovely family, I might like to add. And we definitely don't see that as something light. We thank you for taking your time out to spend some time with us.
Always happy to do it for Juarez, who is the greatest man on earth, as I heard as I was over this chair.
Well, I think you probably already know that. You've known me for a while, but you know, let's not go
Buddy.
Ahead and you know.
No, but good stuff. Happy to do it, man. Happy to do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, we have some history. Definitely, you're someone that I have some knowledge of, and I know that you're a product of Stone Mountain. So, you know, from being a Stone Mountain High School graduate to being someone now that has been elected to an office to take care of kids on the school board, can you tell the audience about that transition?
Yeah, and it seems like a long time since Stone Mountain, right? Since homecoming and all that stuff from
right.
then till now. But yeah, I mean, I guess it involves like a lot of growth along the way. The one thing I could say that I knew then that I still know now is that when it comes to education, relationships matter most, right? Almost more than the curriculum or more than kind of what you need to learn that year. It's kind of where you are in learning about yourself And so, like, throughout the transition from Stone Mountain, you know, so I was a kid who grew up in Oakland, and then, you know, my dad came home one day and said, you know, he's with AT&T still to this day, actually, and he said, you know, we're moving to Stone Mountain, and I think it'll be good, and you know, and it was totally different. So we moved, and I ended up going to this place that was very different than Oakland and San Francisco, but it taught me so much about identity, about culture, about black people, white people, and just how we intermingled and how we learned and came to know ourselves and who we are, and like how deeply ingrained that is in the education process. So I like look back on my years and consider myself lucky to have been able to go through Atlanta, go through and travel, as you were talking about. You know, we had an opportunity to see a great many things. But I still believe, just like I believe when I was a student at Stone Mountain, that it's incumbent upon us to be the translators, to be the carriers of the message, and to bring people along in the knowledge that we have, that we've gained over the years. So I just think that's the responsibility. It's easier now as a dad to accept that as a responsibility.
Right.
I think that's why we're all here. And so, you know, the story goes on, man. So it's somewhere in my mind, I still think I'm like an 18-year-old kid, but I know that's not true. But I still think I am just a kid.
Hey,
I'm so glad I'm not the only person that feels like that.
I think that we are in agreement. It's better to stay a kid than to grow old, right?
Right.
Definitely.
Right. So yeah.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
No. I was just gonna say, so school board member now. So really, I wanted this show to really be about, a lot of people don't know, well, first, what it even takes to get on a school board. And then what is the primary role? I think that if people understood what the primary role of the school board is, then there would be probably more people interested within our community to actually be a board and try and make some impactful changes.
Yeah, and I think once you get a sense of the fact that in most cities like Atlanta, like Oakland, like San Francisco, it's the second largest budget in the city. It's the second largest expenditure of cash that most cities, that our federal government doles out is for education.
Right.
So the role of a school board member is to have fiscal oversight. In Oakland, we are budgeted roughly $600 million a year and have an employee base of about 5,000. And that's teachers, that's janitors, that's a wide range of folks that do a wide range of duties and services for kids all the way up to the age of 25. You know, there's programs for students well into their college years, as they approach their college years. So we manage that. And so the main functions are fiscal oversight, hiring of a superintendent, and that's really it. And to make sure that you have a sound educational program for all of the folks that live in your district. And those are three big responsibilities.
Right.
So, but those are the main things that we do as school board members. And so, yeah, I've been on the board for 2 years, and this year I'm serving as the board president. You get to do the same job, except for you basically get to plan meetings, and that's the only other additional duty. But that's pretty much the life of a school board member.
So how did you become? So walk us through, for those who might be interested in serving, because, again, this is a great way to get, you know, $600 million to say, hey, I've sat on the board that had the responsibility for, you know, XYZ. And there's a lot of people out there doing things like project management, professional certifications and such to enhance their career. So tell them what was the first start of how do you go about saying, I want to be a school board member? How does that look? And then how does it get to the final, you know, drop in the election ballot where people are actually electing you? What is that process looking like? Is it like a presidential election kind of campaign? Is it the same kind of, you get a running somebody heading up your campaign? What does that whole process look like?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. First, I think you've got to make the decision to, first of all, be cool with having your business out there, you know, living a somewhat public life. And it's a, you know, small-time office compared to the president or even a senator or even a city council member. But it's still in a town like Oakland. Very active. You kind of got to say, all right, I'm down to be a part of basically, you know, like being the dude who people are going to blame when stuff goes wrong, right? So you have to be willing to do that. And then, once you have that, then you get in the mix and you got to raise money. And, you know, you can raise up to, I think, $80,000 for a race like ours. When we ran in L.A. for school board, they raised up to $1.5 million because of the size of Los Angeles Unified. So their school board positions are highly sought after and highly influential positions, as they are in any district. So you begin. You know, you got to sit on the – you got to campaign. I remember I knocked doors mm-hmm. in every district, every neighborhood. I developed a campaign team who would encourage me to knock doors, who would come out and knock doors with me, who would support me at speaking engagements, and, you know, hired a campaign manager. So it was really like me learning how to do this as I went. Luckily, I had a lot of great people who were willing to kind of walk me through, give me advice, and support me. But really the most frightening thing was like the first decision to say, I'm going to run, and then to start
driving
people. You know, and really getting out there, because it's really this matter of selling yourself, which is kind of scary, right? Because it's a
rocky
road. Like you don't want to sell out, but you want to let people know you'll do a good job. So that's the path, man. I still can't believe that I actually participated in an election, like as a candidate. It's still kind of weird to think back, but I guess it's true.
I'm glad you won, because if you would have lost, we'd had to reevaluate our friendship. But I'm glad you won. I'm glad you're still doing well. So really, what kind of stuff do we, you know, because we're all about looking at technology, and you have a peer view into all these different, and I believe you're gearing up for an Orlando event coming up soon. So if you can mm-hmm. tell us, what are some of the things that, you know, you've already said, like, what you have control over. What specifically are some of the things that we could look for that a school board can do to help us out with technology?
Well, yes, I think if you take a hard look at Oakland, because we got it going on. Check out our basketball team, the Warriors. You know, we're a good town. But I'd also look at our tax measure. What we did with Measure N was last year it passed, and Measure N is basically a targeted investment to give the goal is to give every student in the district, all 50,000 kids, access to a career opportunity while enrolled, right, a true pathway. And so the piece where technology becomes important is that the goal of Measure N is to erase the gap. And so what you'll find is that black students, Latino students, participate in technology pathways at a rate about 50% fewer than white and Asian students.
Okay.
And so what we're saying is, in order to accelerate the participation of black and Latino students and Pacific Islander students who are rarely spoken for in the entrepreneurial world, in the digital space, creating more Mark Zuckerbergs, creating more founders of Twitters that come from the urban streets, we have mm-hmm. to begin to accelerate that process as early as kindergarten. And so what you'll see in Oakland is us fully embracing principles of coding, fully mm-hmm. embracing efforts to say that coding is a pathway to structural design, to even art design. Even if you have a website that on the back end of that is code, on the
right,
and it's the design that makes it all look pretty and good. Those are jobs. And so what we'll do is people sooner that short you can get competitive, that's all you need is sugar.
Hey, James, you're I don't want to miss any of your points, but you are just breaking out there. And I think you're better now. But what you were saying I think is a very imperative for our listeners to understand, as far as Oakland has seen coding as a way to basically be a launch platform for other venues. I mean, to say that coding, there's art behind coding. There is you know, all different things that you could do when a kid from elementary school learns how to code. I think that's phenomenal because what that does is that brings kids into the technology and where we're at earlier and gets them more associated with where we're at already so that what they're used to is going to be the norm, right? It's not going to be something that's going to be just foreign to them. They're going to have that kind of technology just basically built in. And we talked about generations one time on this show, and you know, the generations have a different level of a relationship with software. And the kids nowadays, I should say, they take it and they run. They run and
that's
they keep
right.
running.
And you never really stop running. So once you – I've been learning my own business for 10 years, and that's what we do, consulting, infrastructure design, web design, and brand management. That's what we do. But so the it's so profound.
Hey, James, we seem to have a bad connection right here. So we're going to take a commercial break, and hopefully we can get you to get a better connection there. So we'll take a commercial break. We have to pay some bills around here. And then after the break, Cairo, you still on with us? I know we're talking you to death over here. I didn't give you a chance
I'm
to
here.
Jump in. Okay.
I'm here.
Everybody likes to hear your voice. Stop playing.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in the next segment in just a moment. You know, I'm still here in the grocery store, so I'm listening to Phenomenal James over there, our elected official, and really dropping science. So I'm really excited about that. I hope that somebody from Atlanta is listening too. So.
Right. So we do have the word of the day. We're going to get James fixed up over there. And our word of the day is microphone. So it was invented by Emily Berliner in 1877. So, MIC, Mike, we're on our mics, and we're about to get off in a second, and we're about to wait for James to get back on, and we will do a short commercial break, and then we will be back to you with more Taste of Technology with Cairo Queen and Juarez Jackson. So stay tuned.
Are you tired of your body sitting at work while your mind is on vacation? Well, let Roberts Travel Services take your body where your mind wants to go. From Tahiti for a romantic getaway to Vegas for a girl's getaway, Roberts Travel Services will take great care of you. Visit them at robertstourismservices.com or give them a call at 404-939-6638. That's 404-939-6638. And if you would like to help people see the world, make money while they do it, and receive travel perks as a travel agent, give Ms. Roberts a call at 404-939-6638. Roberts Travel Services. Let them help you see the world.
Yes. We are back. Do we have James on the line?
I called from a landline. Is this better?
Oh, that's much better. Cairo.
Okay.
Cairo Queen, are you online?
Cairo Queen, online.
Oh.
Check.
Microphone check. All right, so we are all back with our computer word of the day, microphone, which comes in handy, and we just never think about how much microphones have evolved over the years. But with the rest of the peripherals, we use a lot of this technology, and it's become fundamental to what we do. So that being said, I think that's a great approach. We talked before the break about how Oakland is really trying to start from elementary school and have kids learn coding in order to, you know, really develop the STEM pipeline. So, yeah, continue to talk about this Project N because it seems like a fascinating thing for us to even pick up some here in Atlanta.
Yeah, Measure N, tax measure, and so it's basically $1,000 per enrolled student that we can invest in pathways that allow them to experience opportunities. And it could be in the technology sector, it could be in a health sector,
it could be in any sector, but the point is to get them real life experience in a business setting, in a career setting, so that they can begin earlier to start making decisions about what it is they want to do professionally. And that conversation can happen much sooner, I think we all recognize, much sooner now than it did for us,
mm-hmm.
because of
right.
technology, because of the prevalence of the internet. That's really where we are around it. Coding is one of those things that has really caught on, and the city and county have actually started parallel efforts to enroll more students in coding, whether it be a summer program sponsored by the city or a specific program at an after school sponsored by the county. We got major buy-in from some of our best partners out here. So it's really a good time, I think, in Oakland.
Awesome. So what other things you have going on, as far as, I know they have some things coming up where you're going to be flying out and looking at more school systems across America, and I know that's probably usual for most school boards to do. What are some of the things that not only you guys are doing in the school board, but I'd like to also get into, how can us as regular everyday people with kids who are in school, if they're in school, how can we, what are the things as a school board member you'd say that we can do to impact, what your job and make your job easy, or even what are the best ways to contact and let you know about what's going on? It's kind of a multi-layered question. So first would be really what would be the role of a parent, and then what are the things that they can do to make your role easier?
I don't think they should try to make our role easier. I think the role of a parent is just like really the role of, you're a dad, I'm a dad. We would want everybody that deals with our kids to be accountable to their kids. And so I think the role of parents is to continue to advocate for systems that give their kids the best option for when they graduate. And for our kids now, that's easier. It's easier to put them in a position to succeed than it is to put them in a position of harm, right? So parents need to be, it's essential that they're at the table advocating for their students up to high school so that they get the services they need, especially when you start talking about the public sector. The time is now for our public services to start to work for us. Like I said, Oakland is spending $600 million for 50,000 kids. So I would absolutely demand that the service be stellar and that my
right.
student is served. And that needs to be the role of parents. And so as we develop more efficient structures across our country, like, parents are going to play an instrumental role in that, especially around education. So we in Oakland, and I think in more cities, I just visited a school, the Drew School in Atlanta. Most schools that are successful, in fact, all schools that are successful, have incredible parent participation.
Right.
Because you can't teach it at home and then at school and then it be forgotten at home. So those parents
right.
that are there helping with homework and then helping to advocate for better services and more services for their students, it's essential. Because, it might not happen if parents don't advocate. So that kind of advocacy, I think, from parents and community is essential.
And I think for reasons, because you have, of course, the effect of, and I say this as a child who was a latchkey kid, it's so significant to a child to know that their parent not only cares, but cares enough to participate. You know, and it's
mm-hmm.
important to look up and be at a science at your school programs and know that your parent is either there to pick you up or that your parent even came to talk to your teacher, that your parent knows your teacher's names and that your teacher knows your parent's names. That is so significant on levels, even for the actual educator to have an interaction, because they know that what they're doing actually has some bearing when they get home. This isn't like, it's not going on a unsolved foundation, but that there's actual substance behind what they're inputting into these children on a regular and daily basis. So it actually, it goes to be an advocate for the whole education process. I think that is something that people need to seriously look at, because there is a strong lack of parental interaction at all schools, of course, and I think where you look and you see happy interaction, you also see better grades. You see a better,
right.
you know, a graduation rate. You see just overall. I think that is so significant that you said that.
On field day, everyone is there, though.
Say it again.
I said on field day, everyone is there.
On field day?
Yeah, because, you know, that's what I hear from teachers, that they want the same kind of interaction and the same kind of commitment to showing up and showing out when they have the track day or field day at the school where the kids are running races or doing something athletic. And I hear that from them, and I really, you know, and I said that as a joke. It birds started chirping, but it was to say that we need that same kind of interaction that is, you know, when we come to having kids in basketball and some of these athletic activities that we do, same kind of vigor and same kind of emotion really should be put into having kids in these academic rigor. And I know it's easier a lot of time for parents to, you know, have little Johnny in a football game and have their hopes on that. But it's really more data-wise, it's really more functional and really more wiser to have little Johnny in the math bowl and the spelling bee, because the amount of profit that you're going to get for that and the kind of work that if you invest in the same time, instead of having him in T-ball, having him, you know, with some sort of scholarly pursuits, the investment to return is just phenomenal because of where we're at as a society and, you know, what kind of the things we need right now.
Yeah, and I think it's a matter of expectations, right? Yeah, it's okay to expect that your kid do phenomenal things. It's okay to demand that they do phenomenal things. I've always believed
right.
that kids will respond to the expectations we put before them. And when you were talking, I was just reminded, you know, this whole incident that's going on in Baltimore right now.
Mm.
And the one thing that stood out to me was that mom who pulled that kid
right.
out
right.
of the and said, you know what, she was hitting him in the head. Whether that's right or wrong, that's not the issue. The issue is that she was there. And she
right.
she expected more from her son
mm-hmm.
than what he was showing, and she was not afraid to pull him out of harm's way and get him on the right path. And it's really no different than you know what we're talking about as it relates to education. There has to be that intent and that expectation, because kids will meet it every time. Every time we expect them to do great things, they will want to meet our expectations.
Right.
So,
I had a perfect example.
I have a question. Oh,
mm-hmm.
go ahead.
Nope. My example was really simple, but I talked to an Indian guy that I know, and we talked about grades, and we talked about his kids getting grades, and he said, you know what? He looked at me, and he said, if my child comes home with a 98, I would tell them, and he's pointing at me, he's looking at me in my eyes, and he said, I will tell them to go back to school and get those 2 points that they're missing. And I was like, wow, that's a different kind of focus than I've seen in some people and how they – and not saying there is a point where you could become a helicopter parent and just always behind your – you know, pushing them to where it does not work. But I definitely agree with what you said as far as raising the bar, because that's how we get better, is we just continue to, you know, expect more from ourselves and expect more from our kids.
So I had a question, and this probably, I don't know how deep you can get on this. Some school education boards, I won't say which one, they gave like $28.7 million. Now, I may be off on that number by a smidge, but gave the money back to the government. How does that work with school budgets? I mean, because my thought is, I don't spend $28 million for a school, you know, and I'm like, they gave the money back? Is that schools and education programs need money, and they're talking about kids can't get books and they don't have this and that, and they can't put these technology programs together, and we can't afford to pay teachers at work.
Yeah, and so let me understand. They had to give $28.7 million. Did they say why?
No, it was something I heard on the radio, and they said they had to return so much money.
Right.
Oh, it was basically because they couldn't find ways to spend the money. And I'm like, are you
kidding
me?
And it was designated for STEM. It was designated for STEM. So they couldn't find STEM programs. And when you have federal money that's allotted for something, it has to be spent on that. So if they couldn't find their best friend's brother that had a STEM program in summertime or anyone out there that could fit the requirement, guess what? That money's going back to the federal government.
That's right. Yeah, that's restricted and unrestricted funding. The Measure N funding that I was talking about, the tax measure out here, restricted funding. Mm. That means you cannot spend it outside of the purview of college and career readiness, we'll call it. And then it sounds like this technology money. If you didn't have the program, then you couldn't spend it. Because the inclination of districts is to fill a shortfall. Oh, we'll just take that $28 million and pay teacher salaries with it. And so that's why they restrict that money, so that you have to, it's a protection for taxpayers. And yet and still people still find loopholes through it. But you raise up another issue, and that's the lag that exists between educators and the actual, like, the digital infrastructure we live and work on every day, right? So the awareness of a teacher of the true opportunity for a student is probably lagging about 5 to 10 years. And so what suffers are things like, we need to find a place to spend this $28 million, but yet I'm running around, I'm trying to get my class together, my principal's trying to manage all his teachers, and we don't have enough resources to even go out and match this funding to a program. And so those kinds of things, like the less we are involved in bridging that gap, the more money gets wasted, the more kids, you know, don't get the benefit of these kinds of efficiencies. So, you know, now is the time to close that gap so you don't have a story like that, because that's ridiculous, right? $28 million.
How do we get into that space?
Couldn't spend it.
But yet, how do we get into that space? How, and I say we because I know there's listeners that listen that have their own companies that do technical things, provide services for kids. How do they find out when there's these big RFP, requests for proposal, or information that's coming out from the school board? How does a person providing services that want to do business with the school board, how do they get tapped in?
And, you know, each structure is different. Out here, we're actually trying to develop, so for this process, we are developing a website which will show real-time data of all the available opportunities, all outstanding expenditures, all current programs. So we're developing a data transparency system, and then deepening relationship with partners so that they understand that there will be a call for this kind of programmatic request at this particular time. So that you would know if you're going to do business with OUSD, then you would know that in the month of February, they're going to publish all of the opportunities for the subsequent school year. And so, you know, it's really a matter of organization. And then what we find is when we went in to try to implement something like this, that, wait a minute, our software is 20 years older than it should be. Wait a minute. This place is on one system and that place is on another system. So what it did was create an opportunity for us to upgrade all the systems, and then once everything is updated, then you train all the people, all 5,000 of the people, and then you roll out a system. So that's kind of the cumbersome progress, the slow progress of a system that, you know, which most of these school districts, Atlanta Public School is probably larger and maybe more cumbersome. So, you know, more school districts, I think, are thinking of efficiencies and structures to let people and partners know that they are moving down this road. And it kind of works west to east, really, because, I mean, we're so close to the Silicon Valley, right? You know, Twitter, Facebook, all these companies are here. You would think that we would be, you know, all up on it, right? We would have all these technologies and efficiency, that they would, in fact, even have it in Santa Clara. And it's quite the opposite. They are on inundated systems, and they are having trouble letting partners know. But, you know, I have a feeling that as we get better and better at it, that awareness will increase.
Yeah, and I think that's very crucial for us to understand. I made light of, you know, somebody's brother or sister having a company, and that's how the funding gets trickled down. But unfortunately, because they're so antiquated with some of these systems, is that The school board and the officials can only reach out and have these problems fulfilled by people that they know or that know them. So at the end of the day, a lot of these things do get done by people who are in the know. So that's really impetus that I want people to understand, that you have to go out there and explore what's capable and what are the capabilities that are needed as a parent and as somebody that's interested in doing any kind of business with the school board.
Yeah, and so you want to make, and part of the job of the public sector, whether it be city council, mayor, federal government, every government structure in this time, I think their role should be making transparency. It should be at the top of the list and making it easier for people to see and access information. That should really be at the top of the list of every public servant's job. You want to make this easier for parents. You want to make this easier for students, and you want to actually improve outcomes. So I think we're going that way because it's becoming more and more apparent to more and more people that we're not just competing with little Johnny from down the street for the job at
right.
the market. We're competing
right.
with little Teddy in India or John in Iran, who are going to school learning potentially a more advanced curriculum. And your son and daughter, they're going to have to compete with these kids for global jobs and global positions. And
right.
we got to step it up.
So speaking of step it up, I know you're working on the curriculum for next year for high school. So let's take a second, because I know that a lot of parents are out there and this show is syndicated and people hear it from everywhere. But a lot of people are concerned about this Common Core. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where you guys stand, but can you, for a second, break down this really the impetus, why it was decided to go to a Common Core, and also what the Common Core was meant to achieve and what
yeah.
you guys are doing there as far as education?
Yeah, great question. And Common Core is... It's probably a taste of what we got as college students, or a little bit of what I got as a high school student. It's
mm-hmm.
basically the most simplest way to explain it. It's the transition of a teacher who used to stand up in front of the class in front of 32 kids who sat in five rows and said,
right.
"You know, this is what's true and this is how it goes." And we sat and feverishly took notes. And then we got tested on that information a week or 2 weeks or a month later, right?
Right.
That's the program we went to school with, right? Common
mm-hmm.
Core says it's not most important for James to understand that 4 + 4 = 8. It's important that he understand that 4 is comprised of 4 individual units that combined with 4 other individual units creates a new number of 8, right? So the how it works, the critical thinking, right? That very skill, which is what design thinking is, you know, the basis
right.
of every, virtually every new company and new innovation from Facebook to Periscope. This is design thinking applied.
Right.
And so what Common Core is doing is asking students to understand the how. So in understanding the how, that they will begin to create their own designs based on
right.
structural assembly, right? And so and that culminates in Common Core when you look at in English, many schools were already doing critical thinking in English. How do you
mm-hmm.
find your points? How do you put
right.
together a, you know, what's the framework of an essay? But it wasn't so much in the sciences. It was you just have to know the periodic table because you just need to know all the elements. Now they're
right.
saying, no, crack that open. Understand the composition of an element. Understand how it came to be. Much more complex, much more deep. But, this level of thinking, of critical thinking, design thinking, is essential for us to really, you know, find our next phase of development and growth. So that's really, and I think it is the right thing. And you'll find that private schools have been teaching Common Core, as they call it, since 1980.
Right.
And so, you know, now this is really saying that the masses need to understand how to think this way in order to be competitive, in order to find jobs in these new industries. Because what we're seeing
right.
is, you know, the guy who stood on the assembly line, there's not so many jobs for him. But the person who's able to code a page or write a blog, there's plenty of space for them. So
you know, it's funny. It's funny you actually said the operator of, because yeah, there is a lot of funny, because you know I travel America and I go to different manufacturing floors. Even the operator job now, and like you said, it has moved away from this job that used to be for that person that was maybe what they call an unskilled worker. And now what these plant managers and CEOs are looking for are people that they can actually train up that already has that weekend technical skills, where they may have a car at home that they're working on, or are tinkerers and have hobby in electrical, or are some sort of maybe not official being an engineer from a degreed school, but actually have the same skills and the same kind of desire to be a tinkerer rather than somebody just a machine operator. So if those critical skills are very imperative in order for us as a country, and I think you elaborated very much so on how it's no longer a singular a state you're fighting against or a local job. You're really having to think about internationally, where are we at and who are we competing against.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, Google, you know, they are apparently our business leader for the next decade, but they really, you know, they'll tell you when you sit down, we don't really care about Stanford or Harvard. We care how you solve problems, right? And so you can solve. So my argument is, okay, if you look at a kid who, you know, the data on kids who go to school in trauma situations, who walk through tragedy, who walk through, you know, by places where people got killed, you know, what happens in Oakland, what happens in Atlanta, in some of those areas we don't like to talk about, shouldn't this kid have, like, superior navigation skills to a kid who goes to school in a neighborhood that's all well and good and well-to-do every day, that is,
right,
versus the kid who actually travels through trauma, who has to navigate all different kinds of people every day just to
mm-hmm.
protect their own life so that they can make it to school? Who do you think would be better at solving problems?
Mm-hmm.
The kid who leaves the white picket fence and walks two doors to his elementary school, or the kid who actually has to travel through some serious doo-doo to get to school and make it home safely and actually get a good education? I would argue
right.
that urban students actually have the leg up, but what we haven't been doing is teaching them the awareness and how to channel that. And that's what we aim to do.
So, James, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I've been, like, trying to talk for, like 20 minutes, and I keep hanging up and talking. I don't know what was going on. But, yeah, I really have. I've actually learned a lot on this show from you specifically, because that information was really very insightful. And, I mean, some information that I honestly, you know, I don't have children, so anything in the youth spectrum, I only learn from being in the robotics program, because I literally never see children unless there was somebody else. So when I'm talking about this, and when I engage with youth and I look and I see these youth that are being, you know, portrayed as knuckleheads, and then I see the youth in the streets here in Atlanta, I don't usually see, like, the type of students that we deal in the robotics program. They are absolutely stellar, just some absolutely
right.
stellar youth. And then when I come out into the city, that's not what I see. So what I'm really glad that I've gotten this information from you today. And, of course, you know, we're winding down to our last few minutes, I believe. So, I mean, I just wanted to know, is there anything that you would say to people impactfully that, you know, we might be able to give to our listeners that they can take away from this conversation and really just marinate on it, and might be life-changing for them from your perspective as an elected official and with, you know, the experiences that you've had and are having in the space of education, in the STEM space, of course?
Yeah, what would I, if I had a couple words to say, I would encourage people to get involved and get involved locally. You know, that technology only works if it has a local buy-in, right? So people only use Yelp if the restaurant reviews and the service of Yelp is good to the local community. And I know we all want to be worldwide travelers and international travelers. But if each of us dedicated a small portion of our time, our financial investment and commitment and understanding what was going on in the 5 miles around where we live, the world would be drastically improved and almost overnight if we made that decision collectively. So I just invite people to get involved in their local politics. And, yes, you know, we can talk about Obama and Bush and all that all day long, but without a true thriving local economy, none of it works. And now is the time, especially. Yeah, so I would just say that, to just get involved locally.
So it is about 9 o'clock, and James, I'm so grateful that you did join us. And, again, we have to extend another trip because you're traveling, so it would be great for you to come back and give us some more insight. It's actually significant that you probably do that at some point after, I guess, the summer's over with and you have some new revelations. Listen, if you guys want to ever do a sponsorship with this show and you need a commercial ran, we have dirt cheap commercials. I mean dirt cheap commercials where you can get 54 commercials across several different shows for the duration of a month. If you're trying to get a public service announcement, well, I should say public service announcement, but you're trying to get a message across, you're trying to get any information across on this show, you need to email me. Please email me at CAIROQWEEN@gmail.com. That's CairoQueen at gmail.com. Juarez, you're the best co-host in the world. I'm sorry.
Hey, what can I say? I've learned something today. Juarez is the best, and I have some great friends. Thank you, James. Thank you, Cairo. Y'all are on the Juarez team. Y'all are not getting kicked off for now, so keep doing great things. And,
thank you, everybody in America, for listening. If you're listening now, you're listening in the future. This is Cairo Queen's Taste of Technology with co-host Juarez Jackson, who is producing these shows for the duration of the summer. So
absolutely.
We're excited about that.
And thanks again, James, one of my best homeboys in the world. Appreciate it.
Right on.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Robin. We'll see you next week.